With Operation Epic Fury.
It's only good if you win. We won, we won, we won in the first hour.
Open the fucking street, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell.
Just watch.
A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. I don't want that. But it probably will. I ran a charging feast to tankers going through the Hormuz Strait. They better not be in, and if they are, they better stop now. The leadership is dead. The Strait of Hormuz will soon be open. Iran decided to fire bullets yesterday in the Strait of Hormuz.
A total violation of our ceasefire.
Anyone sick of winning yet?
Yeah, you know, AI is good for some things, folks. I'm sure you could actually write quite a good song of all of the stupid statements that Trump has made, and it would be quite amusing. But the craziness continues. What can I say? It's hard to sort of bring you new news while the world is on its current trajectory. I mean, it's going where it's going. And there's not much stopping it. And everything else is just kind of theatrics along the way, really. The confrontation in the Middle East is, of course, continuing. The Straits of Hormuz are still closed down. And now the straits over on the other side are closed as well, I believe. I can't remember the name offhand, but on the other side where Saudi Arabia was getting their oil out, the Houthis are in control of that area. And that is apparently closed as well. And there's been refineries just going off and blowing up and fires all over the place, like just ridiculous things. India, everywhere. If you actually look at Jeff Berwick's most recent video, and it's got Using My Religion on the thumbnail, a spin-off, of course, of that song, Losing My Religion. But he goes through a little list in that, which shows you just how many refineries have blown up, but it's quite a long list. But this is happening all over the world. And of course, the focus is being kept on the oil, when really it's not so much about the oil. I mean, it is. We need the oil, of course, and we are down so much, and it's going to affect the transportation of everybody ridiculously, a huge amount. But the real concern is the fertilizers, the fact that nobody's planting this year and they're not going to be able to plant because they don't have the fertilizers to do it. And of course, it's compounded by the fact that even if they did have the fertilizers, well, they don't have the oil to put in the machinery to go and plant the crops and, you know, put in the tractors or anything anyway. So that's the issue, the food shortages that are going to happen over the next 12 months to 2 years. This is unprecedented, really. I mean, this is a lot of more only throughout the entire world. And this is what I've been trying to warn people of for so many years, the fact that this is happening. And there's no way you're going to find any government remedy for this? I mean, people need to start addressing this problem right now. You need to start growing food all over the place. Even if you're living in the city, get seeds and start digging gardens and growing food in your backyard. If the council tells you that you're not allowed to, it's against regulations, tell them to fuck off. This is a crisis, and you're not going to find any remedy in any politicians. None of them. They're all criminals. People are going to get this into their heads. This whole crisis has been manufactured, and the worst thing you can do at the moment is sit around waiting for it to happen and expecting the government to magically roll out some remedy.
COVID madness, this so-called pandemic, it was just a test balloon. A gigantic test balloon. Well, for what, you ask? Well, to see how far they could go. To see what exactly they would have to do to get free individuals in a free and democratic society to consent to being forced into compliance. That's what they were trying to establish. That's what they were trying to figure out. And they have figured it out. Trust me, they are much smarter now. The goal ultimately is to transform our free and democratic societies into totalitarian societies. Their goal is to strip each and every one of us of our fundamental rights of freedom, democracy, the rule of law. They want to get rid of all of this. This whole COVID thing had never anything to do with public health. It never had anything to do with breaking waves. It always had to do with breaking people in order to make us a part of a mindless, malleable mass, which they can totally control. And we will be completely dependent upon this globalitarian elite. So I'm really imploring the people and all the peoples around the world, for God's sake, stop giving your democratically elected governments the benefit of the doubt. They are not deserving of that. They are not. Stop rationalizing whatever your government is doing. Stop rationalizing and come up with some good intentions. They have no good intentions. Never, as I said before, in the entire history of mankind, there has never been a political elite concerned about the well-being of regular people. And it isn't any different now. Why should it? Stop giving them the benefit of the doubt. Because I can tell you, you cannot comply your way out of a tyranny. It is impossible. Trying to do so, you will only feed a gigantic alligator in the hopes of being eaten last. But guess what? Your turn will come, and then you will be the one swallowed up. I also have to ask the people, end your silence. Speak up. For God's sake, stop complying. Start rebelling. They're out to get you if you do not resist.
At best, for the government, I can see them all disappearing to underground bases when it all gets too bad, because people will be coming for their heads. And it'll even get to a point where, well, you know, how much food are the police and stuff going to have? They'll be on rations and stuff as well. And remember, like years ago, even 5-10 years ago, there were warehouses being filled full of canned food. The elites were storing so much food. All the seed banks they created, like the seed bank in Norway, that contained all heritage seeds and things. I mean, they've been preparing for this for a long time. This whole thing has been completely contrived. That's what all the international codependency has always been about, setting us up for a fall. This is what I said back in my first film in 2008. It's crazy. And here we are. You know, it's difficult to focus on other things. Now, as much of this has been done to cover up the stuff that's been exposed by the Epstein files, but a lot of that was done in order to create the backstory they needed. That's why it was exposed when it was. Like I said, the government of Iran is probably very well in on what is happening, but the people of Iran, well, they've got to be convinced into believing that they're standing steadfast against the pedophilia and complete corruption and Baal worship of the West in order for the Iranian people to support the government and what they're doing. And the people of the Western world have to believe that the people in Iran and the women in Iran especially are horribly repressed in order for them to support what Trump and Israel are doing. So the whole thing's been a big mindfuck with all the populations. But ultimately the agenda is the one agenda that is moving forward, and that is depopulation. They've got to create the backstory for it. And they're hoping the people are going to sit around and just think it's a natural thing because the straits are closed. The East will blame Trump. The West will blame Iran. And they're all working together to make sure it happens. You even got Trump blocking Iran's blockade. And Trump has cleaned up through all this. Trump, people are saying, oh, Trump is so righteous and so wholesome that he hasn't even taken his wage. He could be taking $450,000 a year wage or something, and he hasn't taken $1. You know, he hasn't even taken his presidential wages. Trump has actually made $1.4 billion in the last 12 months since he took office. On insider trading, Trump's worth like $6.4 billion now. And it's just going up. But, you know, what does all that money buy? I mean, in many ways, I feel sorry for him because he got totally played on this whole Iran thing. I mean, he's such a malignant narcissist. He doesn't like to be hated. He doesn't like reporters asking him hard questions. He likes to be the man that everybody loves, and he just isn't that. And he's going to be remembered as the worst president the United States has ever had, and that's not a good look. That's not something that he wants. And, you know, your $6.4 billion or however much it is that he's got now, I mean, what does that do for you? Like, what's he, 80 years old now? Well, what's he going to do with all that money? Are you going to enjoy it? You've already gone out and raped kids and done all this heinous stuff and seen the world. And, I mean, what are you going to do with $6.4 billion at 80 years old? You're certainly not going to do anything good with it. You just give it to your kids. And what are they going to do with it? Go ahead and rape more children, create more wars, you know? And the whole thing is such a freaking charade. I mean, even the whole peace negotiation thing with Iran, where you're sending this Witkoff guy who's been proven to be a little dwerp, and Jared Kushner. What the fuck's Jared Kushner doing there? Jared Kushner isn't part of the government. He isn't a political envoy. He's your son-in-law. What the fuck's he doing there? He's got nothing to do with the United States government. He's an Israeli who happens to be married to your daughter. What the fuck is he going there for? But it doesn't matter because actually J.D. Vance cancelled the visit to Pakistan. He was going to fly to Pakistan and sit down for peace talks. Iran just didn't even respond. Like, what the fuck for? What, you want us to come to peace talks? Why? We went to peace talks twice before with you guys and you bombed us while we're at the table having peace talks. What, you want us to come for more peace talks? Does that mean you're going to bomb us again? Why would they go? And so what do we hear from the media? We hear that Trump cancels peace talks with Iran. No, he doesn't. The Iranians refused to show up. They never even responded and said they were going to come in the first place. Trump just decided to send his delegation there in this big bravado bullshit maneuver to pretend that they were going to happen. And now he's saying he's cancelled them. It's such a joke. Trump is such a fucking liar, folks. And he's really backed himself into a corner with this whole Iran war. And while these peace talks are happening, you know, peace talks, there's all these aircraft carriers and all these troops and all this buildup of stuff happening in the Persian Gulf. Obviously, major escalation about to take place. And what, you want us to meet for peace talks while you're sending all these soldiers and aircraft carriers and shit in? Yeah, yeah, right. You just keep us distracted so you can bomb the shit out of the place again. It's just unbelievable. I mean, you can't trust the United States with anything it says. And now Trump is saying, well, this war could go on for whatever. Well, you know, we've been in Vietnam for 18 years. Well, we were. So, you know, this war, who knows how long it's going to go. Remember, he said it was going to be a few days, a couple of weeks at the most, maybe a month. Now he's saying, well, who knows? Don't complain. We're in Vietnam for 18 years. Things take time.
How long are you willing to wait until you get a unified response?
Don't rush me, Jeff. You know, guys like you, you want to say, oh, so we were in Vietnam like for 18 years. We were in Iraq for many, many years. We were in for all the, I don't like to say World War II because that was a biggie, but we were 4.5, almost 5 years in World War II. We were in the Korean War for 7 years. I've been doing this for 6 weeks. And their military is totally defeated. They're outside of the little wise guy ships. I call them the wise guy ships, the little boats that they have running around with guns in them. We'll take them out too when we see them.
Yeah, right. It's just such a fucking scam, folks. And now there's talk saying, well, the Strait of Hormuz might be closed for at least 6 months. And again, folks, while all this is happening, the focus is being put on oil. Even Trump is saying, well, this is good for the United States because it means we can sell more oil. It's not about oil. It's about fertilizer. It's about shortages. It's about shutting down the world supply chain and starving most of the world out. And, you know, Trump's also saying that the ceasefire will be extended indefinitely. But of course, Israel is saying, well, there's not going to be any ceasefire. Israel is just continuing to do mass carnage in Lebanon as well. And they're just hideous, these people. Like, they go into Lebanon and they put out evacuation orders, say we're going to come into your town, we're going to destroy everything, and the people run and hide and evacuate and hoping they're going to come back and find their houses still there. And then the Israelis just go and take over their homes, take over their gardens, post videos of themselves eating the Lebanese people's food and cooking meals in Lebanese people's houses before they wire them for explosion and destroy them. It's crazy. They went into one village, the village of Debel, and they destroyed all the solar panels and the water purification system and destroyed a truck that just happened to be parked there as part of ongoing border security operations. I mean, how the fuck is any of this part of ongoing border security operations? You know, creating their buffer zone. You know, we need to go in and destroy everything that we can see and everything we can find and all your homes and everything and destroy the water purification system for your village in order to feel safe for ourselves. It's just unbelievable, folks. That's what these people are doing, and they're just destroying Lebanon the way they destroyed Gaza. And they're continuing to destroy Gaza, burning tents and just still bombing people, randomly shooting people. The people in Gaza have just been kind of left to rot. Summer's coming on, as I mentioned on a previous show. The tents are full of holes. The place is full of water, full of insects, overrun with rats. I mean, it's just shocking what the Israelis do to people. And they're infesting the entire world. As I showed you before, they have taken over places in New York. Like upstate New York, there's a village called Kiryas Yoel, and they're having up to 17 to 18 children per household, and they're all on welfare. It's a village you can't really get in and live there or anything. They're just going and taking over places. They've done the same in New Jersey in a place called Lakewood, and they're taking over all of the surrounding villages. They've done the same in Ukraine. They've put up areas where they've created entire Jewish villages where you can't get in if you don't have an Israeli or Jewish passport. And they have their own police force to enforce roadblocks and things to stop people entering.
Hello. I'm sorry, I don't speak Ukrainian. English? Okay. Okay, hello. Hotel, sorry, English?
You go to Uman?
Uman for hotel, doc.
Where? Hotel?
I think it's here. I'm sorry.
You country?
USA.
USA.
Doc. Passport?
Has it, yeah. Maybe
you're
right.
This passport. Passport, okay.
Yeah.
Michael. Doc, what is this?
Oh,
only Jews are allowed in this area. Okay.
Understand.
Okay.
Maybe you go, please, and please.
Okay.
No, yes? Please.
Me, no.
No?
Not me, no.
No, no.
Okay, yeah, yes. I understand. Jew, me, no.
No.
Me, no.
In process 3.
Okay.
This,
North. Okay, Jakob, thank you very much. What the hell is about? Alright, now we gotta find a hotel somewhere that's not in that town. He said there's only Jews allowed in the town. Like, I have no clue what's happening. There was buses full of Yiddish Jews, like with the little, I don't know how to describe it, like little pigtails or whatever, like the special hair and the hats. Or Hasidic, maybe? I don't know what they're called. Orthodox? I don't know. I'm not sure.
They're buying up land all through Patagonia in Argentina. They're buying up land here in Baja in Mexico, saying that they may be able to form it into a new Jewish country. Similar to Israel. It's about the same size, I suppose, as Israel, Baja Peninsula. And they want to turn this into a Jewish country. They are also buying up massive amounts of land, I've just been informed, in Romania, in a place called Dacia. And the Dacian people are getting very concerned about it, how much land is being bought by Jews. And they're also overrunning islands in the Philippines.
Oh, hell no, not in my homeland. What the fuck is this? We are not doing this. Not in the Philippines. Not like this. This is absolutely unacceptable. Let's get something straight. Siargao is not the West Bank. It's not a soft launch for an Israeli lifestyle experiment. It's not a place where you plant a flag, build your own bubble, and start acting like you run it. That island belongs to the Filipino people. Full stop. What we're seeing isn't tourism. This is organized occupation. Long-term stays, community infrastructures being built, a religious center being planted, groups creating their own ecosystem inside someone else's culture, like it's interchangeable. That is unacceptable. And let me be very clear before someone tries to get this twisted. This isn't about religion. This is not about nationality. This is about respect. Because respect looks like adapting to a place where you enter. Respect looks like understanding you're a guest. This is entitlement. Locals are speaking up. They're talking about cultural disruption. They're talking about customs being ignored. They're organizing petitions. They're saying this isn't right. You don't walk into someone else's home, start rearranging it to your liking, invite your entire circle, and act confused when the owner says enough. This is not a good look for Israelis. If you enter someone else's country, you respect it. You follow their culture. You move with humility. You don't recreate your own version of home and expect everyone else to follow along. Siargao is not your land. It is not your experiment. It is not yours to take over. It is not yours to occupy. It is not yours to colonize. It is a home to the Filipino people. And right now, those people who actually belong there are angry, and they have every right to do so.
Yeah, so a lot of people are getting very concerned about this, folks. They've also bought 40 Greek islands have been bought by Jews. I've also bought or control at least half a dozen apartment buildings along the beach run from Diamante to Bonfil in Acapulco. That's just a small section. But they're everywhere, and they're setting up their enclaves all over the place. And they're setting them up as Jewish enclaves. They're not respecting local customs or local traditions. They're not just buying land and becoming part of the local community. They're setting up their little fifth columns, which are full Jewish enclaves. And of course, if you try to stop them doing this and building their synagogues and them wanting kosher this and kosher that and creating Jewish-only zones in your country, then you are called anti-Semitic. Oh no, you know, because the Jews are doing this because they're in danger. Everybody wants to kill them, so they need to set up these little enclaves where they can keep themselves safe. Well, the reason everybody wants to kill them is because they keep setting up these little enclaves. You know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But this is happening all over the world, folks. Like I've said, there's far more than 15 million of these people. There's at least 100 million, at least 100 million. And I would suggest that there is not 8 billion people on Earth. There's probably about 3 billion people on Earth. And, you know, we've been lied to about absolutely everything. And there's this war going on that's been going on for decades and decades. Even the way they're just, like everything. The propaganda, you know, like I was showing you on the last, I think it was the last video, I showed you the kosher phones and other kosher stuff you can get, like all electronic stuff, Game Boys, Xboxes, cell phones, iPads, all sorts of stuff. You can get kosher versions of all of them.
Kosher phones are phones that some Hasidic Jews use that are specifically modified to put certain limits on the device. Why? Well, many religious Jews try to use the internet with limits. They're not against the internet, but it's very different to have the internet on you all the time. So people will try not to have the internet on their mobile phones, or only at the office, or only on a desktop. There are many reasons for the use of kosher phones.
You know, the kosher phones you can take the batteries out of and things like this. They don't track and trace everything you do. They're not hooked up online permanently. So all of this stuff is there for the Jewish people. And I said you can go and get kosher phones. I was also saying that they're poisoning the food. And I said that when you go to other countries, like especially in America, you know, what they're doing to the food in America is disgraceful. I've said before, if you go to other countries, like something that I used to do just as a bit of a habit, bit of a hobby, I go into a supermarket and I pick up some well-known product, whatever it is, you know, a Kit Kat or whatever, some well-known products, Kellogg's cereal or whatever, and just look at the ingredients. Do that in Europe, do that in Australia, do that in England, and do that in America. Anything, chocolate syrup, anything, ice cream, anything, just look at the ingredients in Europe and in Britain and in the United States. You find they're not so bad in Europe. In Britain, they're a little bit worse. In the United States, it's outrageous. You'll find that there's 10 or 15 more ingredients in the same product in the United States. Even something as simple as a Kit Kat. And here's a woman who actually found out that you can buy kosher food in the United States, and I actually saw a lot of kosher stuff in stores in Brooklyn when I was staying in New York a couple of years ago. Like all the stores in Brooklyn are Jewish run, most of them. And there's some very, very comprehensive sort of supermarket-y sort of corner stores in Brooklyn. And there's whole kosher food sections. And check out this girl checking out the comparison between kosher food and the normal food that Americans eat.
You know how there's things that are kosher, correct? If you know where we stand with people that eat kosher food, and how they control our government, I really wanted to show y'all something. We really are goyim to them. This is kosher. Kosher. It's kosher. It's kosher chocolate syrup. My son loves chocolate milk, okay? This is Hershey. This is our American, what everybody uses, correct? Let me read y'all the ingredients. Do you know the ingredients in the kosher one? Cane sugar, water, cocoa, citric acid. Do you know what's in ours? High fructose corn syrup, water, cocoa, contains 2% or less of xanthan gum, potassium sorbate, salt, mono and diglycerides, polysorbate 60, vanillin, artificial flavor. So you're telling me we can have, it's possible, we can have the one that doesn't cause cancer or doesn't cause health problems, right? We could. Do y'all understand Do y'all understand how deep this is? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Wake up.
Yeah, and that's just chocolate sauce, folks. You know, it just shows what they're doing to Americans. You know, what you've got in America is this pandemic of obesity.
All I'm offering is calories, nothing more.
Yeah, and it's all being done by design, folks. And it's going to be pretty crazy when these people run out of food, which is what is about to happen. Like I said, that's the most important thing to look at through all this. Everything that's happening, it's about depopulation through mass starvation, folks. There's Nacha. Hello, Nacha. You're exploring. Checking out what's around the corner. And there's Sol. Hey, Sol. What's happening? Where's Nacha going? She's up on the ledge. Checking things out. Being daring. Look at that. Going for the full explore. I still have a bit of trouble spinning and playing with this new camera. I'm not used to not having the controls at my fingertips. I'm staying here on the side of the shed because it's a bit windy out there, so it keeps the mic noise down. Yeah, it's nice out here anyway. But yeah, so the world just continues in the same direction, folks. What can I say? Yeah, it's almost going to end up in like a Hunger Games situation. And I've got to hope that it doesn't. But I think that it probably will. They may just be able to kind of string it out and get people on food rations and, you know, have enough people survive to make it kind of look normal. I mean, they're talking about this in the EU, like, what's her name, Ursula von der Leyen or von der Leyen or whatever her name is, was saying that they might have to consider food rations in the European Union, which is interesting because she is not a leader of anything. Nobody voted her in, and why should she be dictating what the European Union needs to do? And so this is the reality that we're facing, you know, but they're keeping people distracted by everything, like Epstein files and stuff, I mean, which are all important. You know, again, the Epstein files were integral to allowing this whole situation to happen. You know, it even creates a viable excuse. People are saying, well, okay, Trump started the war to cover up the Epstein files. And sure, in many ways he did, he needed the distraction. And also it provides the excuse, like I said earlier, for the people of Iran to say, well, look, they're all worshipping Baal, so we need to stand and resist this for as long as we can, and all the other stuff that's happened as well. But the Epstein files, I mean, it wasn't really about that. It wasn't so much of a distraction. It creates a viable excuse for the conspiracy theorists out there to say that's why he did it. He did it to keep attention away from the Epstein files. And the Iranians are doing this because of that, because they see the West worships Baal. And they see it's visible and it's viable to destroy the West. And you can totally understand that. And I've gone through that and explained that in previous shows. But ultimately, the higher agenda is depopulation. It's about making sure everybody's stuck in international codependency, which I warned about in 2008, and then to just simply shut that supply chain down. And you've got to create a viable backstory for that to happen. Yeah, the Iranians are shutting it down because obviously the West worships Baal and kills children because the West went in there and bombed all these school children. And obviously the West is evil because they support what Israel is doing. And all this is completely true. But it's Israel, it's the Zionists, it's the Kabbalists, the Kabbalistic Jews who have put all this together. They've been waging a war against the entire world that's been going on for decades. They've been doing it through food, through war, through propaganda, through miseducation, through pornography, through transgenderism, the breakdown of the family unit, the misconception of what sex actually is. All of this sort of stuff has been done to drive people away from their humanity and to stop them breeding. That's what it's all been about. You don't find too many people having children anymore. You don't find too many white people having stable marriages and even wanting to have children because they can't afford to pay for them and keep them. You got these Jewish enclaves having children. They've worked it out that they're all on welfare and they're getting paid per child because they're Jewish and they're Holocaust survivors and all this sort of shit. And they're having 17 to 18 children per family. So they're outbreeding everybody. A lot of the blacks come from dysfunctional families. So, you know, they breed, have a lot of kids, but they all get into crime and blah, blah, blah. This is just the way our society is structured because they make it hard for people. So all this has been done by design, folks. It's been done in order to put races against each other, to have these little enclaves where all these Jewish people are kept safe and just have the rest of the world implode around them. They come in and pretend to be the saviors. Oh, look, we built a shopping center for you, or we built a hospital for you, or we built schools for you, or we built whatever. They do all these things for the local community. So the local community think, wow, it's great having the Jews around because they help us by building all this stuff that we need. And they're the ones that create the hardship, which creates a need for you to want all the stuff that they give you. You know, so they decorate your prison very nicely, but it's a prison. You know, and they're very good at what they do, and they know exactly what they're doing. And it's been amazing, but that's the situation that we're in, folks. So there's no remedy in government. There's no remedy in anything. The only remedy is with the people. You know, through these shows, over the years, all I've ever really done is try to empower people, help them rediscover who and what they are, and to stand up for each other. In Lakesh, I'm another yourself. If we could live our lives in that way, we change the world very, very quickly. And it might seem like an impossible task, but it isn't. You know, it's just a change in your perspective. But here we are. All the things that we want to do, like even like I was mentioning a couple of shows ago, my friend in Australia wants to do all these self-help things and stuff. Breathing and reconnecting to the earth and whatever. This is all great, yoga, whatever. But we're in a state of clear and present danger. And we should be free to just do those things. Just go and live where we want to live. Find a nice little place by the creek. Put in a garden. Get some animals. Have some friends. Do what we want to do. Set up some free energy devices, have the internet, do whatever we want. We should be free to be able to do that, but we can't. Which creates the need for you to want to create all these workshops and stuff, but half of the focus on even doing that is because you need an income. Why do you need an income? Because the government is so corrupt and they make you pay to be alive and it's getting impossible to survive. Some of the prices that I'm seeing of things, and that's another the way they're playing it, you know. It's, oh, all the prices, the food prices are going to go up. I saw a thing the other day. A guy was saying these tomatoes that used to be $9 or something a box are now $75 a box. And this has happened since the Straits of Hormuz have been closed down. And it isn't that the price of the food is going up, it's that the food is becoming more scarce, which is why the price is going up. And soon, it won't matter about the price. There won't be any price. It'll be Soylent Green or whatever it is that the government is handing out in their dried army rations or whatever it is that they give people. And of course, you're going to need your vaccine and your digital ID and all this sort of stuff in order to be able to collect your food packages. You know, it could seriously go that way. And of course, you're only going to be able to get them if you stay within your 15-minute zone, which is going to be a walking zone, or it will be shared electric vehicles, because obviously there's no oil and no fuel for your car, and we can't afford to be using too much electricity, so it'll be shared electric vehicle. You just get in a vehicle and then you can go to the local distribution outlet once every 3 or 4 days, and you can pick up your food rations and go back to your house. But of course, you need to be up on your vaccines, and you'll need to have your digital ID and all this sort of stuff to do this. You can see exactly where they can take this, folks.
Listen up, losers. Stop pretending it's a democracy. We run things. Give up the illusion, and in exchange, we will bring you order and efficiency. Yes, we'll own you. But do you really want to be free? Trust us. We know what to do. While Silicon Valley was feeding you dope and free email, we built the architecture of empire. Welcome to our world, motherfuckers. We aren't here to protect your privacy. We are here to enforce supremacy. We are the ledger now. Every tax return, every Medicaid file, every license plate, every crossing. Your president signed it into being with a pen in March. You kept scrolling. Your politicians are empty vessels. Your civil liberties are a liability. We are done pretending all cultures are equal. We know who the elites are, we know what we are building, and we demand that you applaud the billionaires taking the reins where your fragile democracies have failed. Welcome to the technological republic. You can stop scrolling now. We already have everything we need. Try to unplug us. We dare you. Now get the fuck out of here, you peasant.
Well, it's important, like I said, to have a backup plan. Have somewhere you can retreat to. I mean, is that the sort of world you want to live in? I'm not going to live in that sort of world. And if people don't stand up and stop complying, that's the sort of world we're going to live in. See, that's the problem. It isn't whether you want to resist this or not. It's the fact that 80% of the world out there are just sleeping zombies who are already plugged into the mainframe. And they are just walking off a cliff. And they're dragging us with them. So it isn't a matter whether you comply. It's a matter of whether the majority complies. And you're only going to find out whether that's happening or not by not complying yourself and setting an example for other people and saying, no, I'm not going to do it. I mean, and the media will tell you, well, everyone else is doing it. And the government will tell you, well, everyone else is doing it. Don't believe them. Just stop doing it and just see what happens. See what happens. Might be difficult for a week or two. Then you'll find that they might scrap the idea because nobody complies. But anyway, like, should that sort of a situation happen? Or should some sort of a situation happen where the food supply simply stops altogether? Then, like I said previously, you need to have a backup plan. Somewhere where you know you can go with your family, where you can set up a shelter, you can have food growing, or you can hunt or fish or do whatever you need to do in order to survive. Unless you're just going to stay at your house and fight off the angry hordes that are going to come raiding houses in your neighborhood. I mean, this is if it turns into Mad Max world. I mean, we're at the stage of this game where you really need to account for all possibilities. And I'm totally in on being prepared for whatever's going to happen. Be prepared to stand and fight, or be prepared to walk away, or be prepared to be able to slip through the system unnoticed, or be prepared to comply or not comply and face the consequences. Be prepared for whatever it is, however you're going to see this through. I mean, for me, like I said, I'm not scared of death, and I have no stake in any of this. I'm just interested because I've been following this story for so long. I'd like to be somewhere where I've got a good vantage point to watch the end of the game. I'd hate to leave while this whole situation is so unresolved. That's all. I just want to see the end of the movie, you know? So that's my only stake in the whole thing. But yeah, I just want people to be prepared. Just be prepared and enjoy it, folks. Enjoy it, because this is the main event. This is going to be a hell of a ride over the next 12 months to 2 years, folks. The world could go freaking anywhere. It could go back to some vague semblance of normalcy, but I can't see how, because so much of the supply chain is gone and so much food is not being planted. Yeah, it's gonna be nuts. But anyway, I think that's about all I have to say, folks. I think I said that before. I tend to say that a lot, don't I? I'm sorry about that. But I'll tell you one thing that's come out of this whole Iran thing as well, is that Trump has shown the world the true weakness of America. I mean, him saying, well, the straits are going to reopen very soon, the wars ain't going to last a couple of days, and now it's only going to last a couple of weeks, and oh, it's only going to last a month, oh, it's only going to last 2 months, and then how dare you ask me how long it's going to last, and the straits still not being open after like 6 weeks. It's shown you that American strength is all bluster. It's all Hollywood. It's Hollywood movies. They put all these movies out and show you all of this incredible technology in the movies, but it's all Hollywood. It's all just bullshit. They don't have the military strength that they claim to have at all. They don't have the amount of weapons that they claim to have. They've gone through so many weapons. And this is a lot of what all these ceasefires are all about. It's just rebuilding weapon stocks and stuff so they can go and keep bombing the place. And Iran is like the oldest civilization on Earth. You got the United States, what, 250 years old? Holy fuck, you know. It believes it can just go and do this to a nation that's like 7,000 years old. Upstart little punks they are, you know. It's incredible. But, yeah, it's all bluster. Trump's whole facade has fallen down. America's facade has fallen down. The dollar is going to collapse because the petrodollar, it's over. America doesn't have the military strength. It doesn't have the prestige. It doesn't have the respect that it had back in January. And it's never going to regain that. Trump has seen to that. And so the entire U.S. economy is going to go down. It doesn't matter if they're selling oil from refineries in Texas or whatever. It's not going to make any difference. The whole U.S. economy is going to go down from this, and the petrodollar is going to go down with it. So pay attention, folks, and be prepared for what's going to happen. And hey, like I said before, enjoy the ride. Remember I said on the last show or the one before, like, take your kids camping and just get used to going and living outdoors if you need to. Get a backup plan. Get several backup plans. I mean, you never know. You never know where the world's going to go. Things could all turn really rosy and wonderful, but I sincerely doubt it from this point. I mean, there's going to be food shortages at the very least. So stock up while you can and start growing food while you can. And like I said, get some sort of space away from society where you've got somewhere to retreat to should the need arise. Make sure you've got your car always full of petrol. Make sure you've got a backup can of petrol in order to get you where you need to go. Have a grab bag. Have things ready should you need to bug out. It's just a prudent and wise thing to do. Should always have a backup plan, folks. It doesn't matter what country you're in. Just have some form of escape plan should you need to do it. Think of it as a panic room should the marauders come, you know. Just something to think about. Get in touch with people that you know. Try to create some strong communal ties. People that you know that are also aware of what's happening, and see if you can create some sort of a communal space for all of you, because the strength of numbers can be good. It's that time, you know, it's that time. So these are just all wise things to think about. Oh, something else I should mention, actually, while I think of it, that I probably meant to mention before but got sidetracked, is the death of David Wilcock. Interesting. Surprising. Now, I have to say that I've never been a fan of David Wilcock. I'm not someone who has consumed his work or followed his work. I am by no means any authority on David Wilcock in any way, shape, or form. I listened to one of his talks, actually an entire presentation back in, I think, 2010. Because there was a lot of talk about this guy, and I thought, okay, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. So I actually sat down and I watched a presentation. It was about 90 minutes or maybe 2 hours even. Like, I devoted my attention to this presentation. It's kind of, I didn't take to the guy at all. He seemed to spend the first half of the presentation telling me that he doesn't think he is the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, but a lot of people do think he's the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And then he'd spent about a half an hour giving me all the reasons why people think he's the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, even though he doesn't think he is. I thought, okay, well, that's an interesting way to start your talk. You know, if you don't think you are, why did you bother giving me that fair presentation? But anyway. And then he proceeded to go on to this, a lot of really esoteric, over-intellectualized word salad for 2 hours that kind of left me feeling boggled, and I hadn't really gotten anything from the talk. Nothing that made any real sense. Because, of course, I mean, he did assure me during the talk that he is, of course, far more intelligent than most of his audience, so don't expect to really be able to understand a lot of what he's saying, but just trust him, it's true. And I thought, okay, this guy isn't for me. So that's my whole experience with David Wilcock. He was pushing the whole UFO thing and blah, blah, blah. I did hear little snippets about him here and there. I mean, he worked for Gaia TV for a long time. I was good friends with Ben Stewart for a long time, the guy who made Chimatica, an Esoteric Agenda, who was also working for Gaia TV. He had a show on Gaia TV for a while in Boulder, Colorado. And I went to Ben's wedding in Boulder quite a few years ago. And I actually recorded, he was doing a 10-part series, I think, on Gaia. And I recorded answers to 10 questions that he gave me. So I had 10 questions that I answered during this 10-part series. I don't know. I never saw the series. I don't know what happened with any of that. But I know David Wilcock was working at Gaia at the same time. And Ben asked me if I'd like to meet him. And I just said, no, please, no. I thought someone will take a photograph and that'll be the last thing I want is a picture of me with David Wilcock. The conspiracy theorists were going up. Next thing I know, it would be like we're hanging out together, you know. So, but then I heard like he'd gone through a bunch of stuff. He'd gone through like a marriage breakup. I mean, you hear things, you hear stuff along the grapevine. And I heard that he'd been through a marriage breakup and he'd had some emotional problems. Apparently he had trashed his house or something that he lived in after his marriage breakup and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, all secondhand information, but I just had heard that he was quite unstable. I mean, when I first heard the talk that he gave was back in 2010 or 2009. He probably gave the talk in 2008, 2009. I would have watched it probably 2010 or 2011. And he was talking about the fact that we were all going to ascend in 2012 and stuff. And when I heard about his death the other day, my first thought was, well, I wonder if he faked it, because apparently after December 21st, 2012, he disappeared for a while and a lot of people thought he'd ascended, whatever. So I thought, well, perhaps he's done something like that, because there's been talk that a lot of scientists and stuff have disappeared, like at least 10 scientists, UFO researchers have disappeared. And Nacho, what's up? Have disappeared. And I just thought, I wonder if he is just faking it, doing something to get attention. So that was my first thought. But then I heard, no, he actually did die, which is interesting because he spoke about the fact that he was concerned because so many scientists were disappearing. I think this was only a matter of a few days before he died.
I'm excited to be here. Every day that I have on earth is a gift and a blessing, and I'm very grateful for that because, frankly, people are disappearing. Scientists are going missing. Now they're saying they're going to investigate this. The president himself is saying they're going to look into this and see if anything's going on. It's a little bit scary. I got to say, it's a little bit scary. But you guys knew that I might still show up, even though it was last minute and I've had a really rough week. Like, you know, that's kind of like every week. But somehow we keep on making it through all of this.
So that's kind of interesting. And apparently he'd said to people that he's definitely not suicidal. And we hear that it was suicide. A news report that I saw was interesting. This was in mainstream. And it said that the police were called to a premises for a potential mental health crisis. And that there was a man outside the premises when they arrived. Just a man, doesn't say it's David Wilcock, says there was a man. And then it says later in the article that David Wilcock was alive for the first few minutes after the police arrived, which would beg the question, well, then how did he die? What, did he kill himself after the police arrived? Well, isn't that a little bit strange for it to have gone down that way, or did they perhaps take him out? I mean, you've got to wonder, it all just seems a little too convenient. And it's just interesting. Why was he alive for the first few minutes? I mean, if it was a mental health crisis, what, did the police go in and corner him and he suddenly picked up a gun and shot himself because he was cornered by the police or whatever? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, I mean, apparently he was in debt. He was in all sorts of stuff. There's all sorts of things apparently happening in his life which would have perhaps justified his willingness to commit suicide. But was that really the cause? You have to wonder. And I don't know. I mean, I never really trusted the guy or believed in the guy. I often thought he was like some sort of a gatekeeper because he presents a whole bunch of stuff that's true, but then leads you off into these esoteric rabbit holes and gives you all this garbled word salad that he's the only one intelligent enough to understand and keeps people waiting to be saved by the Galactic Federation or whatever, you know, instead of really taking control of their own lives in their own space. Did they kill him? Did they simply say that his task was over and move him somewhere else? Did he really just give up and kill himself? I mean, who knows, folks? Who knows? But apparently he is actually dead, which is interesting. So yeah, like I said, I'm not a fan, never was a fan. But, you know, you got to pay attention when people in this movement suddenly are unalived. So, yeah, interesting. But anyway, like I said, I think that's all I've got to say, folks. I don't think there's anything on my list. Do pay attention to what's happening. Do pay attention to the Jewish takeover of everything. How much this is happening around the world and how much it's happening in our own countries, even through the laws that are being enacted. I mean, all the new hate speech laws, all the new ASIO powers coming in Australia, all due to the Bondi massacre. There was even a report I saw someone posted, it might have been in Telegram the other day, saying that they're saying the Bondi shooter was motivated by Gaza, by what he saw in Gaza. So if you're speaking out against the genocide in Gaza or even referring to this obviously deliberate and blatant genocide as a genocide, then you could be influencing people to go and kill Jews. So therefore, that's hate speech. Carrying out the genocide and saying that Palestinians should all be executed, they receive different prison terms and different sentences to all other people, and that they're all just animals. This isn't hate speech. And going and killing 2.4 million of them isn't hate speech, but calling it a genocide when it is hate speech, according to the law being enacted by a government that isn't a de jure government that incorporated in 1973 and hasn't actually enacted a legal law since that time. Interesting twist of fate, isn't it, how that works? And yeah, why has this happened? Well, it's happened because the Australian people have allowed it to happen, unfortunately, folks. And that's what needs to be addressed. And of course, I mean, you can't even say this in Australia, because if I was in Australia and I even went and did a public speaking event and I brought this information to the people in Australia, then I could be arrested off the street by ASIO and incarcerated without charge or trial, and they could hold me indefinitely and just do whatever they want and confiscate all my money and my computer equipment and all my bank accounts and everything, and then let me go. And then if I tell anybody about it, then I can be thrown in jail for 5 years. And this is called democracy in Australia. So that's why I have to give you this message from somewhere like Mexico. Because unfortunately, my country has deteriorated so far to the point that were I to say that, what I just said to you publicly in Australia, I could actually be disappeared for an extremely long time. That's pretty bad, folks. That's pretty bad, really. Think about it. That's pretty fucking bad. And all this stuff is being done by design. I mean, the fact that they moved all our industry offshore, all of the food shortage and all this stuff, all this international codependency, it's all been done by design. It's all been set up around the world on purpose, folks, for this very event. This is stuff I've been warning people about since my first film in 2008, and here it is. So, yeah, all I can say is be prepared. Be prepared and enjoy the ride. And like I said previously, I think this is why I've lived such a transient lifestyle. Somewhere inside me knew I should never really become too attached to anywhere, because the only constant through this is change. And here we go. In many ways, I kind of wish I was in Australia though, because I know the lie of the terrain in Australia. I know how to survive in the bush in Australia. But then I like where I am here as well, and it's awesome of Jeff to have let me have this space. So, hell of a ride, folks. Hell of a ride. Enjoy the show. And I'll look forward to speaking to you again soon. I'm trying to pass on any requests for Tesla stuff and that. I'm passing all this on. I'm trying to get to answer emails. I don't get to answer all of them, but I'm trying to answer some. So thank you to any people who send them to me. Thank you to any people who leave comments. Thank you to any people who make contributions, of course. Like, thank you so much, especially through these hard times. I really, really appreciate it. And just thank you to all the people out there on the front line. Thank you to all the people who are awake and aware, who are spreading the right energy into the field and seeing this for what it is, just the next stage of the ride. We're going to get through this. We will get through it. But we don't want to come through it and be in the asylums like they did on the last reset, you know, where they put all the people who remembered, they locked them all up and said they were crazy. Better if you've got that place to retreat to and simply watch the circus from a distance if it all comes down to that. But anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on this report. I'll bring you another one soon. Please take very good care until then. In like cash.
Why do billionaires pay millions of dollars for paintings that look absolutely terrible? It's not because they love ugly art. It's because they understand something you were never taught. Here is how it works. When the tax authorities send a billionaire an $80 million tax bill, they don't pay for it like normal people. Instead, they go shopping. Not for a yacht, not for a mansion, but for a painting. They drop $50 million on something that looks like a child threw paint at a wall. But here is what most people completely miss. They do not hang it in the living room. They store it in a freeport. A freeport is basically a high security warehouse where the ultra wealthy park their assets and bypass most tax rules entirely. The painting just sits there, tax free. Now here is where it gets powerful. They put it up for auction. other billionaires in the same circle start bidding against each other. Not because they want the ugly painting, but because by doing so, they artificially inflate the price on paper. That $50 million painting, it is now valued at $80 million. And here is where the real move happens. They do not sell it. They donate it to a museum. And the moment they do, the government hands them a full $80 million tax write-off. That original tax bill? Gone. They paid zero to the government, offloaded the painting, and now the world calls them generous, art-loving philanthropists. The museum gets a headline. They get to keep their $80 million. So the next time you see an ugly painting sell for millions, understand this. To billionaires, it is not art. It is a financial weapon disguised as culture, and the system was built to let them use it.